Well, good afternoon. Hello, my name is Mike McCarthy, and I'm going to be moderating this panel discussion for everybody today. Thank you for joining us. I'm the firm managing partner at Hancock Askew & Company. We're a full-service accounting and advisory firm with offices in Florida. We're excited to be teaming up with Hunter McLean for this informative event. Since the launch of the PPP program, both of our firms have been helping many of our clients through the application and now the forgiveness process. We see a lot of different scenarios and we answer a lot of questions for our clients, and we're glad to be here today to share some of this with you. First, I'd like to thank the panelists for their time and the organizers for help putting this together. There's over 300 of you registered for this, so we thank you for taking your time to listen to us. We have two lawyers with us from Hunter McLean, Robert McGurk and Luann Bronstein, and two CPAs from Hancock Askew, Stephen Leonard and Sam Evans. In the background, we have some hardworking folks that'll be monitoring the questions as they come in. And thanks to all of them. Specifically, I want to thank Andrea Dove from Hunter McLean and Danielle Gentry at Hancock Askew. So how's this going to work today? Each of our panelists has a very good broad knowledge of the PPP program. And each of them also has some questions that they dug into, so they have the details and we can be responsive. There is a chat feature in Zoom. It's on your screen and you'll see that. So if you have questions that you would like to be raised during the program, please use that chat feature and go ahead and type in your questions. We have some folks that'll be working behind the scenes and monitoring that chat box to see if we have an answer to question, they'll make sure that we raise it. Now, with over 300 people out there, we're not exactly sure how many questions are gonna come in. So if you have a question that's very specific or very, you know, detailed to your specific needs, we might skip over that and stick to the general topics that apply to everybody, but we're gonna try and get to everything and we're gonna try and help you out as best we can. We are recording this webinar, so all the participants will receive an email at the end and they can tune back in for reference. And of course, at the end, we'll also put up our emails and things. So if somebody has a specific question that we didn't get to, you can email one or all of the panelists to get there. Before we get started, Andrea, can you please put up our disclaimer? So we have a couple lawyers on the phone and an accountant. So we just wanted to put up a little disclaimer, let everybody know this is our best professional advice as of today. But these programs, as you all are aware, have been changing week in and week out, and there are still things that may change before this is all done. So that's our little disclaimer. Thank you for that, Andrea. Okay, so we have some prior submitted questions. Thank you all for doing that, and we're going to start with those. For each of the first few questions, I'm going to introduce the panelists. Panelists will introduce themselves and start taking some questions. So, Rob, let's start with you. Can you briefly tell us about the program and introduce yourself?
Well, thanks, Mike, and it's a pleasure to be here today. My name is Robert McGurk. I'm an attorney at Hunter McLean, a tax attorney and also a CPA. I have 25 years of experience advising businesses and individuals regarding tax matters. In terms of the PPP program, just a little bit of background, I'm sure you're all aware, but let's just kind of refresh our memory. So in March 26, Congress passed the CARES Act. As part of that was the Paycheck Protection Program Loan Program. This program was designed to help small businesses, primarily businesses with less than 500 employees. And the intent of the program was to tide those businesses over during what was thought at the time would be a relatively short period of time while COVID-19 was impacting their businesses. The program allowed for loans for those businesses, and the loans were based upon payroll, specifically 2.5 times your monthly average payroll, either for 2019 or the prior 12 months. The purpose of the loan was to be used for primarily payroll, but also mortgage interest, utilities, and benefits, employee benefits. The predominant benefit of the program was a loan forgiveness potential. And so in order to have the loan forgiven, applicants needed to use the funds over an 8-week period for those permitted purposes that I just mentioned. And in addition, they wanted to stress the importance of using the funds for payroll. So 75% of the loan forgiveness amount had to be used for payroll. The idea being that small employers would maintain their connection with their employees during this temporary period and then would be ready to start up as soon as the COVID-19 disruption was over. When the program was introduced, there was a mad rush to obtain the funds. There was $350 billion allotted. The funds ran out within the first few weeks. Companies that had pre-established relationships with SBA lenders had an advantage, and they tended to be the larger companies. Also, they didn't open up the program because of technical difficulties for sole proprietorships till a week or two later. So what happened was that within the first few weeks, the funds were used up, and there was a lot of small businesses that still had not yet received the funds. So in early May, they allotted another $315 billion to the program. And so that was helpful. But what we found was that COVID-19 was lasting a lot longer than we thought, more than 8 weeks. And a lot of people were complaining that the funds were being used because of the program rules to employ people who had no work to be done. And so Congress revisited this and passed the Paycheck Protection Flexibility Act, which relaxed some of the rules. For example, it extended the 8-week period to use the funds to 24 weeks for loans after June 5th. For loans before June 5th, you could elect to either do 8 weeks or 24 weeks. And it also relaxed the requirement that 75% of the forgiveness amount be used for payroll to 60%. So that was very helpful. Congress also extended the deadline for applying for the loans. It was to expire on June 30th to August 8th. I just checked, there was still about $80 billion left that had not been used as of August 8th. At this point in time, however, there's not an opportunity to apply for loans unless Congress reauthorizes. Mike, I'll turn it back to you at this point.
Thank you for that. Andrea, let's do a quick poll. What state are people listening to this from? All right, if you would all just respond to that briefly, and we will put up the results here shortly. While people are responding to that, Andrea, can you put up the slide on the results for Georgia? Now, if you all can see this slide, what this is telling you, this is just for the state of Georgia, there were 138,500 loans under $150,000. There were 10,000 loans from 150 to 300,000 and so on. There was only 123 loans in the state between $5 and $10 million. So while we've all seen some press that large companies are taking advantage of this program, as with a lot in the media, check your facts. The vast majority of the money you can see from this slide in the state of Georgia went to small businesses under 150,000 in loans. Can we switch to the next slide? I think we have Florida. Almost the same detail, bigger numbers. Florida had 350,000 loans under $150,000. And the next slide would be South Carolina, 55,000 loans under 150,000 and only 33 between 5 and 10 million. You've probably seen some statistics on. Thank you for those poll for that, Andrea. Do we maybe have the results of the poll? There we go. So 85% from Georgia, about 9 from Florida, and 3 from South Carolina. And we have some others. So thank you for joining us. Luann, Rob gave us an overview of the PPP program. A lot of people are very interested in the forgiveness process. So can you give us an overview of the forgiveness process?
Sure, Mike. Thank you. And I'm pleased to be on the panel today. I'm a partner with Hunter McLean. I'm head of the corporate law group, and I have over 20 years' experience, primarily with a large law firm in Atlanta, but I'm pleased to say I've been in Savannah with Hunter McLean since 2017. And I've been involved with the PPP since it first launched in mid-March. So as Rob mentioned, the purpose of the PPP is to benefit employees, businesses, and the community. And the intent is that the money, if used for payroll and qualified expenses, does not need to be repaid. And that's important to keep in mind. So it will be forgiven because the business has spent the money to keep people employed. In effect, the loan becomes more like a government grant. Now, there are a few dynamics here to qualify for forgiveness. For example, did you spend the money on payroll? Did you spend it on qualifying expenses, which will be discussed in a bit more detail later on? Did you need to cut employees? Therefore, you have to run a FTE calculation. Did you cut wages? Do we need to look at that? So there is going to be some level of detail on loan forgiveness calculations, but the idea is it will be forgiven if used for the intended purpose. Now, while necessary to quickly react to an unprecedented situation, the PPP rollout was very frustrating. The rules were vague, and in some cases, the criteria was too rigid. As Rob mentioned, first the funds had to be spent within 8 weeks, but then it was determined that that was not going to be practical for most businesses to use the funds and meet the intent of the program, which was loan forgiveness. So that was expanded to 24 weeks. 75% had to be used on payroll, but that would have a negative impact on loan forgiveness. So that was reduced to 60%.
Thank you for that overview. That's very good. We're going to get into some more detailed questions on forgiveness, and I already see some questions coming in the chat feature as well. So we'll get to those as we come along. So that's a good overview. Stephen, can you give us an overview of some of the tax implications of this program? Do we really get the money tax-free? Yeah,
sure. Thanks, Mike. My name is Stephen Leonard. I'm a partner in the tax department with Hancock Askew. I've been with the firm in my 15th year and focused mainly on closely held businesses. So to address tax considerations of PPP, the major consideration is the forgiveness of the loan itself for income tax purposes. The CARES Act specifically excludes the PPP loan forgiveness from taxable income. That's a big deal. Typically under the Internal Revenue Code, forgiven debt is taxable income. There are some exceptions. And thankfully, the CARES Act did carve out an exception for the PPP forgiveness. So that's good news. There is a catch. So for expenses that are used or that were paid for with the PPP proceeds, those are currently not deductible. The longstanding Internal Revenue Code that says if you pay for expenses with non-taxable proceeds, those related expenses are not deductible. We'll have to apply that general rule to PPP funds usage until Congress acts. There is talk in Congress that the members of Congress are working on exception specifically for expenses to deduct. So we'll have to see what happens. But to put this in perspective, with the loan forgiveness and associated expenses, you may have anticipated a net tax benefit. So for instance, if you have a $100,000 PPP loan, you use a full $100,000 for forgiveness, you may have anticipated your tax bill, say 40% rate, being reduced by $40,000. Well, currently, as the Internal Revenue Code is written, that is not the case. And so your tax bill may well be higher than expected for income purposes, unless Congress acts. Beyond income tax considerations for the forgiveness itself, there are some other some provisions to coordinate with, especially with payroll tax credits that you need to be cognizant of. And the CARES Act also passed a number of tax provisions in addition to the PPP loan forgiveness, which we may talk about later.
That's a great overview. Thank you. All right, and now to the accounting side of things. Sam, for the basic small business, how should they account for this loan?
Yes, thank you, Mike, and thank you all who are joining us here today. My name is Sam Evans. I'm a senior manager in our Hancock Askew Savannah office. in our audit and advisory practice. I've been in the accounting industry for roughly 13 years, with 9 of those years in public accounting. And I've, over that time, had the opportunity to serve businesses of all sizes, from single shareholders to Fortune 500 companies. So as you can imagine, we've received a lot of questions related to PPP. So I'm glad to be here sharing those thoughts with you today. With respect to your question, Mike, that the proceeds or the funds that are received can essentially be accounted for in one of two ways. The money that's received can be shown as debt or a loan from the government. You would essentially set up a loan on your balance sheet with the cash proceeds, the debit to the cash, and then the credit to a loan on your balance sheet. Or the other alternative is to treat it as a government grant. Under that method, you would just set up a deferred liability and then reclass that liability to revenue as you incur forgivable expenses. So both of these alternatives are available to small businesses, and this is something that's unprecedented because historically, for-profit businesses have not been eligible for grant accounting because grants were not eligible to small businesses. So it's important to distinguish that for-profit businesses can use either of these alternatives. With respect to the complexities around the accounting, we think most businesses will default to treating it as a loan. The accounting treatment is simpler that way. For book accounting purposes, the portion of the loan that is forgiven will ultimately be recorded as a gain. But those expenses that you're paying with the proceeds are recorded as normal expenses. So the net impact to your P&L is essentially zero with respect to the funds received and the expenses paid. The portion of the loan that isn't forgiven will be paid, you know, required to be paid back over either a period of 2 years or 5 years. There's the two terms because loans that were issued prior to June 5th originally had a 2-year term. Those issued after June 5th had a 5-year term, but there is leeway in the guidance, or it's ultimately up to the discretion of your bank. If those loans funded before June 5th can be extended for a period of 5 years, that is available to borrowers.
That's great. Thank you for that overview, Sam. An important point that Sam made there is these loans were for for-profit businesses and non-for-profit businesses, and sole proprietors even can apply for these loans. So it truly is addressing small businesses of all types. This is good. We're getting into the details now. Before we get into another detail question, let's do another poll. Andrea has a poll to launch on whether or not you expect forgiveness. So if you would all respond to that, and we'll dive in. And we're going to have some more discussion on the forgiveness process. There's a simplified version that's coming out, or that is out, and the way that the banks are going to address it. So before we get into that forgiveness, let's talk a little bit more about the loan itself. Rob, you talked a bit about a second tranche in the act. Can you give us a little bit more details of whether there's more money available or a second tranche for those businesses that may have already spent the money they've gotten?
Yeah, sure, Mike. As I mentioned, the obtaining the original loan, the expiration date, unfortunately, was August 8th, even though there is $80 billion still left unspent. However, there is a proposal by Senator Rubio of the chairman of the Small Business Committee of the Senate, and it has bipartisan support, which would provide for a so-called second tranche loan for the PPP. Now, this is a little bit tied up with negotiations between Congress on further stimulus for COVID-19. But the way it's currently drafted, this would apply to businesses or nonprofits with less than 300 employees who have suffered a 35% or more revenue reduction in the first or second quarter of 2020 compared to the comparable quarter in 2019. And in addition, if the business is subject to the SBA revenue thresholds, has a revenue below the SBA revenue threshold, or if not, meets the SBA applicable alternative test. which is basically has less than 15 million of tangible net worth and less than 5 million of taxable income the prior 2 years. In terms of the revenue, a lot of service businesses, it really ranges. You know, I took down some notes, and so for example, you know, the businesses, the revenue targets for different businesses can range from $1 million to $35 million, for example. So for just as an example, barbers and hair salons, they have a revenue target of $8 million, whereas hotels are $35 million. Grant-making nonprofits are $35 million, religious organizations, $8 million, farmers, $1 million, contractors like plumbing, $16.5 million. So you have to look at whether you have less than 300 employees and also you meet the applicable revenue threshold if one applies.
Okay.
The amount of the loan also would be, it would be capped at $2 million and it would be determined again, 2.5 times your average monthly payroll in the prior 12 months. So same kind of approach. And it also would be forgivable in the same manner, you know, subject to using it for permitted purposes and 60% of the forgiveness amount for payroll. So hopefully Congress will act on that. Again, it has bipartisan support because there are a lot of businesses who received a first-time loan who really, because this has really stretched on the COVID-19, would benefit from receiving a second tranche loan.
So if I'm summarizing what you're saying for everybody out there, the first tranche or the first PPP loans, there was no financial criteria. People just had to certify COVID affected my business and they applied for the loan and they got it if they could fill out that certification. And the forgiveness will be automatic if you spend it on the right things, assuming you have the right certification, you spend it on the right things, you'll be forgiven that first tranche, subject to some of the details we've talked about. The second tranche, if we get it, there's gonna be some revenue targets and there's gonna be some more criteria. So it's not gonna be everybody gets it. It's only gonna be those businesses that were significantly affected with their revenue. So that's good for everybody here. Now, does this also apply to, say, a sole proprietorship? Can my loan amount change if I'm a sole proprietor, or is this only for businesses?
So this second tranche loan would apply to nonprofits and sole proprietorships, similar to the first tranche loan. Again, the criteria is less than 300 employees, the 35% revenue reduction, and meeting the applicable that your revenue doesn't exceed the annual gross receipts for your business. In terms of the first loan, there was a lot of uncertainty for sole proprietors and partnerships and owners of businesses, really. As we talked about, the loan amount was determined as 2.5 times monthly average payroll. Well, you know, in case of a partnership or a sole proprietorship, they don't pay themselves payroll per se. So there was confusion about how you determine that. And so in the absence of guidance, a lot of applications were submitted that basically understated the loan amount. And had they been done correctly based upon guidance that came out later, they would have had a larger loan. Unfortunately, there is not an opportunity for those companies to increase the amount of their first loan. Although this legislation that I just mentioned from Senator Rubio would afford those borrowers the opportunity to increase their loan amount based upon subsequent guidance.
Okay. Well, that's good. All right. So people need cash to keep their business going. Stephen, one way I hear that people are getting cash is there's some additional loss carrybacks. Oh, wait, before we get there, Andrea, do we have the results of that last poll we did? So 81% of us expect full forgiveness. So that's great. And that's honestly the intention of the program. So thank you for that information. So Stephen, back to you. If I'm looking to get some cash, tell me how this loss carryback works. What ways can I accelerate some of the tax advantage of this?
Sure. So part of the CARES Act was changing in the rules of claiming refunds for net operating loss carrybacks and carry forwards. The previous to the passage of the CARES Act, the changes in the NOL rules made it impossible for, took away the ability for business owners to carry back net operating losses to previous years to claim refunds. So with the passage of the CARES Act, they brought back the carryback provision, starting with the tax years 2018, 2019, and 2020. So even tax years that have already passed 2018 to 2019, you can look back to your business returns, your business income or loss, to see if you had a net operating loss in those years, carry back for claims or refund. This carryback is for 5 years. So again, if you had a loss in 2018, you can carry it back to the year previous to 2013, so forth. That's available for 2018, 2019, and 2020. And it also loosened up some other rules with net operating loss carry forwards. The previous rule before the CARES Act limited the NOL deduction to 80% of your taxable income. That 80% limitation is also taken away. In addition, there's some other tax provisions that are helpful to taxpayers to increase losses and deductions. For businesses, the Section 461 active business loss limitation was eliminated through 2020. The acceleration of the corporate AMT liability credit was made. The business interest deduction limitation was loosened from 30% to 50% income, again, for 2019 and 2020 tax years. And a big deal for appreciation purposes is the technical correction of bonus depreciation on leasehold improvements. So if you all recall, a couple of years ago, Congress had a technical error in legislation that took away previously eligible leasehold improvements for bonus depreciation. But they also increased bonus from 50% to 100%. But with the technical error, leasehold improvements were no longer eligible for bonus at all, which was a big detriment to business owners. But the CARES Act corrected this, made leasehold improvements eligible for bonus, 100% bonus, and better yet, they retroactively made this correction at the 2018 and 2019 tax years. So if you want to consult with your tax advisor, go back to your 2018, 2019 tax return years, even if they've been already filed, see if you can determine if there's NOL carrybacks or extra deductions you can generate for refunds.
So those are things that people can do right now to get some cash. If you lost money in your business in 18 or 19, you can go back and amend your return and carry back that loss and get cash today. Or if you acquired assets in 18 or 19, leasehold improvements, you can go back and take additional depreciation deduction and get cash back today. So those are some tax planning items people can think about today. Anything else they can think about right now?
Well, on the individual side, there are some other provisions that are helping taxpayers. There is a waiver, an extended waiver, the 10% penalty on early distributions from retirement plans and IRAs. There's a waiver of the required minimum distribution in 2020. Even if you've already taken out your required minimum distribution from an IRA, you can actually return it to have that, what we call RMD, non-taxable. There's an increase in the charitable deduction limitation. And there's even exclusion from income for employer paying student loans on behalf of employees.
Nice. So if you have needs for money, you can take it from your retirement. Of course, we're not your wealth advisors here, but be careful taking money in and out of the market. That's a big decision if you're robbing your retirement early. But those provisions are there. Okay, let's dig into some of the forgiveness. A lot of people want to know the details of forgiveness. So, Luann, assuming I got my first loan, when should I apply for forgiveness? Is 8 weeks better than waiting 24? Give me some thoughts on the time period and when I should apply.
Sure, thanks. And those are good and timely questions. And that is because the SBA opened its online portal on August 10th for lenders to submit loan forgiveness applications and materials. So it's clear that a PPP recipient can submit loan forgiveness application right now, as soon as all the funds for which forgiveness is being sought have been used. And this is as opposed to waiting until the end of the covered period to run. However, lenders are still awaiting further guidance on a number of issues. And there's a general feeling, because there were so many changes along the way in the rollout, that there may be more changes to come on the loan forgiveness piece.
So if I'm understanding it right, there are some change that you might apply now if you've used the money because the portal's open, but there may be more changes coming. So some people are waiting thinking there might be more favorable changes. Some people are going ahead and applying now. So I guess it's kind of company specific as to what makes the most sense for your company.
Mike? Hi, thanks. I think we might have had a little technology difficulty there, but I think I got your question. So I'm going to go ahead with what I hope is the right answer. And that is, first I'll say that there was a change in the covered period from 8 weeks to 24 weeks. And that was one of the ways that the PPP rules have been loosened along the way since it was first launched. So again, June 5th is a magic date. For loans made on or after June 5th, 24 weeks is the covered period. But there's a caveat that's really 24 weeks or December 31st, whichever occurs first, because the covered period cannot extend past December 31st of 2020. And then for if borrowers receive their PPP loan before June 5th, then they can elect to have either an 8 week or 24 week covered period. And then next to address your, what I think is your substantive question, if you're ready and able to apply for forgiveness, should you go ahead and do it now or should you wait? So one thing to remember, even if you submit your loan forgiveness application now, the lender has 60 days to issue a decision to the SBA. So there's some feeling that the banks may be, because that is a long period, the banks may be holding off and not submitting it to the SBA right away just to see what kind of changes might be on the horizon.
And okay. Well, thank you for that. So I've seen two bank websites personally, forgiveness portals. And so just to summarize a little bit, what we're seeing is that banks are putting up a portal, and wherever you got your money from, wherever you, whatever bank you got your loan from, your bank will have a forgiveness application. You'll fill it out probably on the web with your bank. And then the bank, once they get all the information, will have 60 days to validate that information. And then they submit it to the SBA. And then your forgiveness is actually when the SBA sends the bank back a notice saying, yes, this loan is forgiven. At that point, the bank will officially forgive your loan. Am I summarizing that right, Luann?
That's correct. And I think the SBA has 90 days to make its decision, but there's a general feeling that the SBA will not use the full 90-day period.
Okay. And of course, there's a lot of talk as to how things are going to happen. Right now, the general discussion from our reading is loans under $150,000, which is the vast majority, as you saw from the numbers early, will be processed very quickly and will be forgiven without a lot of questioning from what we understand. Whereas a loan over $2 million is going to be subject to some type of audit, and they haven't even put out the audit rules yet that I'm aware of. So when you submit your loan for forgiveness, you're going to do it through your bank. Then your bank has time to process it. Then they send it to the SBA. The SBA has time to process it, and then you get forgiven. Okay. So with that, Andrea, let's launch another poll on when people plan to apply for their forgiveness. If you all will answer that question, and Sam, let me turn it over to you a little bit. Luann was talking about forgiveness of the loans. Can you give me the detail on the qualified expenses? Let's talk a little bit more. I mentioned people will have to submit the qualified expenses to their bank as they apply for forgiveness. So give us some detail on what are those qualified expenses.
Yeah, sure. So to obtain forgiveness, it's important to understand what those forgivable costs are. Rob alluded to it earlier in his introduction, but the forgivable costs include payroll cost, mortgage interest on real or personal property, rent and lease payments, and then also utility payments. There's this concept in the guidance of incurred and paid, and it's an important one to distinguish here because the intent of the loan is to cover expenses that are either paid or incurred over your coverage period. So what that means is for example, if you have a payroll period that ends prior to your coverage period, meaning you incurred payroll prior to your coverage period beginning. However, you paid that payroll during your coverage period, that payment on that payroll is eligible for forgiveness. So it wasn't incurred in the coverage period, but it was paid in the coverage period. And then conversely, on the back end, if you have incurred payroll prior to the end of your coverage period and subsequently paid it on the very next payroll run after your coverage period, that is also eligible for forgiveness. So if you think about it, the payment on the front end of the coverage period, and then also what you would have accrued on the back end are gonna be eligible for payroll costs that are eligible towards forgiveness.
So Sam, tell me, what is a payroll cost?
So good question. Payroll cost, the definition is somewhat expansive, but it consists primarily of cash compensation, and that is your wages, salary, commission payments, and tips. It also includes benefits. So separate from the cash compensation, you have benefits, and that includes vacation pay. It can be FMLA pay, severance payments, group health insurance premiums provided on behalf of your employees, employer retirement contributions, so 401k matching that are provided on behalf of your employees, and then state and local payroll taxes. But in that same sentence, I think it's equally important for us to distinguish which payroll costs are not eligible for forgiveness. And there's just a few to list. Most of us are probably familiar with it at this point, but any employee whose primary place of residence is outside of the U.S., those payroll costs are not eligible for forgiveness. Any compensation greater than $100,000 on an annualized basis is excluded from forgiveness. And then any wages for which you have or can, for which you have claimed a payroll credit under the CARES Act, those wages are not going to be eligible to be counted towards forgiveness.
Okay, and just to clarify on that over 100,000, that means if somebody's making 150, I can count their wages up to 100 in my calculation. I just can't count the 50 over that. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it's also cash compensation, right? So you got the difference there. You have payroll and then you got the benefits. $1,000 limit is on the cash compensation.
Okay. And just to expand a little bit on the non-payroll, you mentioned mortgage interest and rent. Those seem pretty straightforward, but what would be included in utility costs? What type of things could I include there?
So utilities can include anything from electricity, water, gas, telephone, and internet. Those are the main utility costs that are eligible. We did talk about mortgage interest. I think it's important to distinguish there that the mortgage interest means that this is collateralized debt. So interest on collateralized debt is eligible for forgiveness. Unsecured loans, you can make payments, you can make interest payments out of your PPP funds, but they won't be eligible to count towards forgiveness. So that's an important distinction with respect to the interest piece.
Got it. So Sam, last week I read an article in the Wall Street Journal about a guy who bought a Lamborghini with his PPP proceeds. So does that count?
That gentleman will be stuck with a loan. This is a good forum to also say that vacation homes and luxury yachts, maybe private planes, those are not gonna be very helpful for forgiveness.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that up. Andrew, do we have the results of that last poll? There we go. So interestingly, this poll is split. So we got about 48% in the first category there and about 46% in the second category there. So, there's a lot of things to consider as we go through that. So that's interesting for you all to see. You're not alone in making these decisions. Rob, let's go back to you. There are some people out there that have maybe some other SBA loans. How does that affect the PPP? Does that disqualify me or anything?
No, it doesn't. And just to take a kind of related thing, I saw a question come up about, if you have applied for the first tranche loan, and they do allow, and this legislation is enacted for a second tranche loan. The fact that you've applied for forgiveness on the on your first loan, does that negatively impact your ability to obtain the second loan? And under the legislation, no, it does not. So if this legislation goes through, you would be able to obtain the second loan. Another question that came in was someone had not yet applied for the first loan. And I noted that there was $80 billion still left, but the application to make for the first loan expired on August 8th. They said, so one of Rubio's proposals is that the $80 billion that's still left would be available for first timers as well before December 31st. But no, you can have a paycheck protection loan, and you can have other SBA loans. For example, an economic industry distress loan. That's a loan that it's a true loan. It's not forgivable. It has a 3.75 interest rate, but it does have a long maturity date, 30 years. You can use it for broader purposes, working capital, paying vendors. But it is important that you can't have an EIDL loan and use it for the same purpose as a paycheck loan. So if you're using the paycheck loan for payroll, you have to use the EIDL loan for something else. And so they're still taking applications for the EIDL loan. If it's above $25,000, you may have to provide security collateral. And above, I think, $100,000, you may have to provide a personal guarantee if you're an owner. There's also an ability to obtain an express loan, $25,000, if you have a relationship with an existing SBA lender. You cannot obtain the paycheck loan, however, if you're in default or behind payments on one of your current SBA loans.
Okay. We had a question pop up. I'm just going to revert back to Sam really quickly on the dates for eligible expenses. There's some confusion. Is it the date I pay the bill, or is it the covered period? So for example, if I have a Georgia Power bill that goes from the 15th of the month to the 15th of the next month, and then I pay it, you know, at the end, is it the day I pay it, or is it the day the expense is incurred that I can include in my eligible period?
So for that utility period, the 30 days, you paid it during your coverage period, even though you may have incurred 15 days of expense before your coverage period, the total amount of that payment is eligible for forgiveness. Does that clarify the question?
I think it does. Thank you. Okay. Now, Rob, back to you. If I'm the owner or a partner, shareholder, employee, Sam mentioned when he was talking about payments to owners. Can you clarify how payroll and health insurance works for the owner of a business? I've seen a few questions on this roll up as well.
Yes, this has been an area where there's been confusion and the guidance has been rolling out over time. So the rules depend upon for owners, whether you're electing the 24 week covered period or the 8 week covered period. And it also depends upon the type of entity. Are you a sole proprietor, independent contractor? Are you an owner of an S corp? Are you owner of, are you a general partner of a partnership? Are you owner of a C corp? And of course, if you're an LLC, that tax classification could be a partnership, it could be a C corp, it could be an S corp. So those rules apply. For all of them, in the case of an owner, there's the general limitation that was mentioned before, that the cash compensation component cannot exceed $20,800 if you elect a 24-week period, which is basically if you take 2.5 months divided by 12 times 100,000, if you elect if the 8 week period, it can't exceed 15,383, which is 8 weeks divided by 52 times 100,000. So you have that basic limitation. The cash compensation for any owner can't exceed that amount. And then in addition, in the case of an owner, there's a limitation based upon the amount that you earned as cash compensation in 2019. So it also can exceed, basically the amount that you earned in 2019 multiplied by a fraction, 2.5 months divided by 12. So you have both the limitation based on prior year. Also, it depends upon, in terms of non-cash compensation, if you are a sole proprietor, then unfortunately you cannot include separately health benefits or retirement contributions for yourself or state taxes for yourself. Same if you're a general partner. Whereas if you're an S corporation, you are allowed to include your retirement contributions that you pay yourself during the applicable period, whether 8 weeks or 24 weeks. In terms of the retirement contributions, it is limited, however, to, again, the amount that you paid in 2019 to yourself, which again is that fraction, 2.5 months time divided by 12. So again, just to summarize, it depends upon whether you elect the 24 week covered period or the 8 week period covered period and the type of entity that you are.
Okay, well, that was certainly a lot of numbers and figures and math. And what I would say to folks is, if you're making over $100,000 or you're a sole proprietor, you're the owner of the business, pay special attention to these rules and maybe talk with your accountant, with your lawyer, you make sure you do that portion of the calculation properly. Because again, just to summarize what's gonna happen, the bank's gonna ask you to provide support for your expenses. Then they're gonna go through them and make sure you're providing the right support. Then they submit it to the SBA and the SBA is gonna go through it. So at some level, there's gonna be a couple of people looking over your calculations and you don't wanna get hung up in this approval process. So you really wanna submit everything properly on the front end. So while we're talking about forgiveness, Luann, can you give us a summary on this simplified process I'm hearing about? What is the simplified process? When does that apply? And kind of give us a summary of that process for people.
Sure, thank you. First, let me go back to one point on when you should apply for forgiveness. And it was really interesting that the poll was essentially split 50-50, because a lot of business commentators, their party line is there's no need to rush to apply. Just because you can apply starting August 10th doesn't mean there's any compelling reason that you should apply. And that's primarily because if you expect your loan to be forgiven, the associated interest will be forgiven as well. So to your point, Mike, you may as well wait to see if the process will become even simpler. I mean, these are maybe just even reasonably educated guesses, but some people say, well, if your loan is less than $2 million, you might expect that it'll evolve to the point where it will be just where it'll be forgiven on a signature loan. But that's not.
I've also heard a benefit of extending to the 24th week is that if there's any uncertainty on the eligible expenses, you might want to elect a longer period of time so that you can make sure you have enough expenses to be eligible for forgiveness.
Yes, those are good points. I think the people who are rushing, not to use that as a bad word, but who are applying now, I mean, maybe they are the businesses that prefer the certainty. Let's get the clock started on the forgiveness process. Or they may have a need to get the loan off the books and are less comfortable waiting. But if you want to proceed now, there is a form. It's form 3508EZ. And the SBA estimates that 75% of loan recipients can use the EZ version. And you can use the simplified version if you're within one of the following three categories. The first is sole proprietor, independent contractor, or self-employed with no employees. The second category is you did not reduce the salary or wages of employees by more than 25% and did not reduce the number of hours of your employees. And the third category is you experienced reductions in business activity as a result of health directives related to COVID-19 and did not reduce the salaries or wages of employees by more than 25%. So the easy form, while not quite check the box, there are a couple pages of instructions, but really there's only one page of information and one page of certification. And there are no face-to-face meetings. The loan is, you can scan in copies of your documents. E-consent, e-signature is all accepted. So it is, right now, a pretty easy process.
That's great. And interestingly, we had a question come across from somebody who said they had exhausted their loan, but due to a local government sort of rolling back the opening guidelines, they were unable to operate. And so they were questioning, you know, can they weren't unable to maintain their headcount. So they're questioning because the government caused that. And so your item three here of rules to use the simplified form is you experience a reduction as a result of health directives from COVID-19. So that applies directly. So that person can still apply for forgiveness using the simple form, assuming they have all the appropriate, they use the money for the appropriate expenses over that period. So those that don't use the simple form, because they cut back their headcount or because they cut back wages, are there exceptions for the FTE headcount decreases? What do we need to be thinking about there?
So I think there are, you know, probably primarily two that I will address. So one is the scenario where you decreased your headcount because of lack of business activity. So borrowers are exempted from the loan forgiveness reduction arising from reduction in the number of FTEs during the cover period if the borrower can't bring back employees due to change in business level. So if it can't get back to the level it was operating at or before February 15th, due to COVID-19 guidance or regulations issued between March 1st and December 31st, 2020. And that would be guidance or regulations issued by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, the Director of the CDC, or by OSHA that relate to standards of maintenance for sanitation, or social distancing, or worker or customer safety requirements. So the important part here, and I think I heard that in your earlier question, is, but what about local or state government mandates or shutdowns? Those count too, because those mandates were issued either directly or indirectly as a result of one of the three government agencies that I just mentioned. Okay. And the other exception is, what if you want to hire your employees back, but they have found other positions or they're concerned and they're not interested in coming back? And there's an exception for that too, if you document that you have offered to rehire them and they declined and you submitted all of that to the local unemployment office.
Okay, well, thank you for that. The questions have been coming in and we very much appreciate it. We are bumping up against time. We only have about 5 or 6 minutes left to go. So I did just want to address a couple of questions that have come across. And one of those is, does the bank verify forgiveness or does the SBA verify forgiveness? Does one of our panelists want to tackle that one?
Well, I think that the SBA the bank will give official sign-off on forgiveness. There is talk about SBA auditing larger loans. I think was the amount over $2 million, right? So for those loans that are fairly low, you may just have the bank sign off on forgiveness. But for those very large PPP loans, you may or may not have an audit by SBA to verify the calculations and expenses eligible for forgiveness.
Okay. Thank you for that. I wish we had time to get to all the questions that are still there. There are a number of them. We will try and divvy them up and reach out to you and those that submitted them and give you some kind of response as best we can. But I also want to be respectful of everybody's time, and I want to end on time. So I want to thank you all for giving us the opportunity to present to you, over 300 of you out there. And I'd like to thank the panelists for their time. Andrea, can you put a slide up of the panelists' names and email? There we go. So that's everybody's name, phone number, and email address. If you have a specific question, feel free to email any of us, or all of us if you'd like, but feel free to email us. And again, after this call, you will get an email with this slide, with everybody's contact information, and with a recording of today's program. So we encourage you to reach out to us, and we hope that we've been helpful to everybody. And I just want to thank everybody for their time today, and wash your hands and be safe, and we are going to get through this. So everybody have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you all.